Hare Krishna. Well, thank you all for waiting. I just arrived in Vrindavan. Give me a second, I can do this. Okay. Can you still hear me, everyone? Hi, Rob.
We can hear you, Maharaj.
Okay, thanks. Yeah, I really appreciate you all waiting. I'm sorry it's a little bit late. The thing is that to do the classes, when I come, I have to get my phone kind of set up for the whole thing. And there's one person that helps me, and he's really set it up nicely for me. I think he's got me the right server and everything. I sound maybe a little hoarse because since I've come here, I mean, right when I came, a group's come from New York, not New York, from actually all over America, and even two people from Europe with Ragana. We have a group of about 25 people here to see Vrindavan. And it's amazing the receptivity. You know, I thought this year let me hold a Japa class, because someone asked me. So the first morning, out of the 20, five people on the tour, I think it probably at least 20 came in 1 hour chanted Japa with real depth. And yesterday I took them into the forest of Vrindavan nearby. Those of you who've been here recently have done this tour with me. Because although Vrindavan has been recently kind of covered a bit by urbanization, somehow they're right nearby. You can get to, you know, really, really 100,000 acres of just, you know, land, you know, going back to the Jamuna, beautiful gardens with roses with their fragrances. And you really have to kind of, like, you have to go to Michigan, you have to go through one gate that's kind of locked, you have to open it up. And there's a chain, Lucia, we all go through, and then we go to the Hermitage. Literally takes 15 minutes, but it's so isolated. The Hermitage of this Molly, it means a gardener. And he's so nice. When we came in, he sat us all down and gave us just baskets of these roses, fragrant roses. And just, you know, really, you're it's a vortex. You're back, a matrix, I don't know what you call it. You're back in time. You know, someone who lives like they lived 5,000 years ago. And smiles like someone who's been 5,000 years ago when they're unfettered by when your life is that you wake up, you know, in the morning in Vrindavan, and you just go pick up flowers, and then your family just string them together. You put the flowers on your a basket on your head, and you go to the temple, and people buy the garlands for this, you know, within a hour walk. There are 5,000 temples, and the real problems of life are birth, death, disease, and old age. But those are the problems the person has. And they're the real problems of life. And not all the other problems that everyone else has. You just see in a modern context all the problems that people have. Beyond. It's just, you know, natural problems. And that's a real culture, because culture means that energy should be saved for self-realization, because that's the real purpose that's the real purpose of life. And energy goes to so many other things. Sometimes I describe this Van Ashram, our social and economic basic problems. And social means basically, or economic, social economic means, where are you going to live? Who are you going to marry? What type of job you'll have? And where's your spiritual inspiration? So true society just solves those automatically. Basically, you know your job, and it's generally according to your propensity. It should be automatically solved. If you're intellectual or brahminical, then you'll be a teacher or a guru or astrologer or something. And it's not like you have to go and apply for it. Somehow or other, the social system is that that's your occupation, and there's economic reciprocation for it. And if it's economic, then, you know, it's not unemployment. Somehow people just, you know, you have land or whatever the business is, and the nature is, it's facilitated. And if you are administrative, you're born into that situation, or that opportunity is there. Guna karma, according to your work qualities, somehow. But in today's society, people don't know where they're going to live, generally, or a lot of energy has to be spent in life on that. Who are you going to marry? So much energy is spent on that. A lot of times people do it 2-3 times, so a lot of energy is spent on that. And what the work is, so much energy is spent on that. A lot of times you can't get the career according to your nature, and then it's economic, it's oppressive, the type of. And then spiritual guidance is also hard to find. I mean, those societies, there's such qualified people right within your village and town. So to actually see, you know, that type of situation and how kind of relatively peaceful it makes life, relatively. So energy can be, you know, placed in the right thing. So to take these people from New York and just take them into... One lady wrote me years ago, it's kind of like her Alice in Wonderland fall into the rabbit hole experience. And the kirtans now in the temple, which is also an interesting thing, people thought that when I enter left, the kirtans would be finished. I mean, it's just more and more people becoming immensely qualified. A lot of people came to Vrindavan to try to help out, but there is so many, I mean, when I sit in that evening kirtan, that used to be, you know, okay, at least there's one, and there are phenomenally so many good kirtaniers and cooperative. The kirtans have been really nice in that way. And Vrindavan, you know, I've just gotten into Vrindavan, and I mean, in a sense, what Vrindavan means, I mean, theologically or spiritually, it's a conception of reality. It's a conception of ultimate reality. Is there a goal that we move towards and seek? In other words, what's our objective? And a theological conception is an objective that's transcendent. At the spiritual, which means there's an objective that's eternal. That the objective is not affected by time. Because if it's affected by time, your objective, then it's going to be filled with the duality that which you're attached to, you lose. So there's a transcendent objective, an objective which, if you get, you never lose, or you realize something that you've always had. So also, even with these people, I was explaining objective. I was explaining objective. And there's a film, Women of Bhakti, made by Donegal and Hillary. And Mother Rukmini speaks. And, I mean, if there's two people that stand out, I mean, it's Rukmini and Jamuna. Rukmini, her realization is so deep. She's explaining that our conception of reality is not void, it's a loving affair. And she said, how good is that? Just think of it. A conception of ultimate reality that's a loving affair. Isn't that what everybody wants? But anyway, I've explained these people in a simple way. What Vrindavan means is, the first thing is that there's a center. But this group, that was with Raghunath, he's so expert, they were in such a high state of ecstasy. Such a high state of ecstasy. And I was explaining to him, why are you in such a level of happiness? It's just such a simple principle. Well, one thing is, they're a group. And there's like an objective to the group. There's even a leader to the group. And what is that objective? You know, it's something, first of all, there's a group. They bought into this an objective. There's an authority, a goal, an objective of a group. And it somehow they tie into that objective. And what happens to it, and as it morphs into a group, then the person's individual objective becomes the group's objective. And it's called love. They move out of the individual egotistical sphere. They move out of the individual egotistical sphere. So they're no longer in the consciousness of the center. And when you develop that, especially in a group, it causes a friction. It causes a friction because you know, an individual goal is at odds with the another individual goal. Where if they're united in a group goal and they're satisfied with the group goal and the group authority and the group leadership, because it is also love, then everyone's satisfied. And when you have that experience, either uniting for a festival, uniting in a family or something, you're in a position where love can flow, because once you set yourself as the center, as the subject of enjoyment, the subject of enjoyment is not the place where love flows, that kind of consciousness. The object of enjoyment is the consciousness where love flows. So, somehow that's achieved, and it's achieved on the basis of Krishna consciousness. It's a very, very powerful thing. So I was describing that that's the principle of Vrindavan. The principle of Vrindavan is there is an authority. It's God. The objective, the subject of enjoyment is absolutely the most attractive, all attractive. Center of enjoyment. And then there's love. So I quote it from the Bhagavatam, how this works, where when Krishna is blowing his flute and coming into Vrindavan, how enlivened everything is in love, and everything's in a mood of service, and the wind is in a mood of service. So the wind is not just blowing by chance. The wind is blowing consciously to please. The wind is going over the lakes, collecting the fragrance to please. The wind is carrying the soft, cool droplets of water to please. And he's moving out of love. That is the conception of reality. And if there is a God, why should that not be the reality? Not a place where everyone is centered for their own enjoyment. How does that make sense? Of course, there are some conceptions from religions where each person becomes his own God. Anyway, this was Vyasadeva's vision when by Bhakti Yoga he endeavored to see the absolute reality. Mayachitara Pasayam, he saw God, Apashyat Purusham Purnam, the supreme absolute reality, and he saw everything under his control. Out of love. He saw an exchange of love. So when a group comes here like that, unified, and then they come into an experience like this, it's an incredible experience. And to see intense spiritual transformations in so many people is amazing. Now, that was pretty good considering you're a little jet-lagged and I didn't get to bed too late and it's very early in the morning here. So when I woke up and I looked at my watch, the shock I had that it was, already 8 minutes past the time the class began. Supposed to begin. I just kind of rolled out of bed into the class. But by God's grace, I didn't miss it because I'm very much attached to the regularity of the classes, and that I missed too. So somehow or other, we will read one verse. One second. I think we're up to 76. And then I got to scoot outside and meet that group. Just reading something. Oh, nice verse. Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Bhakti Shastrani Mananiyani tud bodhika karmani kananiyani. Once you respect the revealed scriptures of devotional service and discharge the duties they prescribe. The most important bhakti shastras have been translated with parampara purports by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada writes, in our Krishna conscious movement, we have therefore limited our study of Vedic literature to Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, and Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. These four works are sufficient for preaching purposes. They are adequate for the understanding of the philosophy and the spreading of the missionary activities of the world. Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Leela 22.118. So the previous verse, it's really coming down now to describing attaining perfection. It's giving a few details here. The previous verse was to avoid argumentative logic. It's a very interesting thing, not interesting, but important thing, that spiritual life means to move away of purely egotistical activities. It doesn't mean that we don't have tastes and desires, because bhakti, again, it's very essential, bhakti is about dedication. So it's not like we're vairagyas, stoics. In fact, it's not what bhakti is. Bhakti is your heart becomes filled with divine bliss, and your fervors and selfish wants are automatically diminished. But not your attachments that you use in a spirit of devotion. But one thing that's really an anartha, really unwanted, is the type of debate and argument based on ego. One way in which we try to establish our superiority is by argument, that we're always right. Not that we're seeking truth. That's another type of argument. That's called vada. But that we're always seeking egotistical victories. It's so important. People being defeated in argument. And sometimes in India, it's like the national pastime or something. People like to argue with each other. And even to the extent of, unless it comes down in one sense to defending one's teacher or, even people don't like to argue and debate. I mean, with the example of Rupa Goswami, people come and challenge him, he signed a paper, okay, you've defeated me. He wasn't interested in establishing it that way, but Jiva Goswami, the same person, came to him, to defend his teacher. So in the same sense, when one is fixed on Shanta Brahman, a source of knowledge that one believes is perfect and transcendent, not interested in reading so many conceptions. A lot of times you see in India, as sadhus, they're just reading the Bhagavatam and Chaitanya Charitamrita. And not in a way that they're bored or they're narrow. Of course, their level of reading is to relish their relationship with Krishna. to relish their relationship with Krishna. Rather than to get the knowledge to do so. That's called rasa. It's an aesthetic experience of bhakti. An experience that fills their heart and satisfies one. The experience that we're actually seeking to live in that. I feel in Vrindavan we have some opportunity. So here, it's talking about that bhakti shastani, mananiyani, we should respect. Just looking for a cross reference because I didn't have so much time. Well, it says a little bit, we should respect or dwell. And not only that, it says, and tadbodhika karmani, because by them is known, karmani, kananiyani, the duties that we should do. What is the whole Bhagavatam is based on what is the duty of a man who should is about to die and what should he not do? What is the duty of a man who's about to die, and what should he not do? To do and what not to do. So that's the question always, isn't it? And there's subtleties involved. What to do, what to not do. Even in this, there's subtleties involved. But what about other books? What to do and what to not do? I have other books. Why? Here it says, Bhakti Shastrani Maninyani. What is it? No, I need to pronounce it. Well, in those books. For the most part. I guess there's a sense, too, that good ideas, good thoughts, good feelings, good aesthetics can be found in other places. There's also a sense of completeness. Because, I mean, if you look at the Chaitanya Charitamrita, there's the philosophy and there's the aesthetic. The supreme aesthetic, the incredible poetry. It's about people who love poetry. But anyway, even to make that decision, you have to have a basis to do so. And really deep, deep spiritual literature should give you the perspective and basis even how to do that. And not in a narrow way. In a very broad way, the swan, how to see the essence. And you know, the perspective of Vrindavan, I mean, my God, once you enter into this place, once you enter this place and kind of touch the depths of spirituality, it's quite an amazing experience. So I'm going to have to end just a little bit shorter today, and I ended a little bit shorter today. But hopefully the good news is I'm well situated here, and with the help of one incredible young brahmachari, 30 years old, named Mahavan. Incredible soul. with the help of such an incredible soul, not just because of his technological wizardry, but it's kind of complex here to get the kind of stuff you want. And, I think to get me the right thing, I can call the West comfortably, that even with good earphones that he got, and I believe pretty good reception, I should be able to make these calls regularly, more than I have in America, where I'm traveling. And anyway, thank you all for waiting. I was in a state of shock when I woke up because I was late. Would anyone like to say hello? Someone please say hello just to make sure that I didn't lose you.
Yeah, Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Okay, thanks for waiting, Gail.
Welcome back to Vrindavan.
Mm-hmm. What's that?
I said, welcome back. Is it to Vrindavan?
Yeah, it is to Vrindavan.
Yeah. Your home.
Anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj, this is Vajrade.
Hare Krishna Vajrade. Yeah, I kind of somehow time went and I missed doing my duty there again, but this time we'll plan as soon as I get back, the first thing, the best date, the best arrangement, we'll do those things. Okay.
Thank you.
Anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, it's Allegra.
Who is it?
It's Allegra Maharaj.
Allegra, wow, okay. Hare Krishna, I guess we'll see you here in the winter, hopefully.
Yeah.
So nice to see all these people from, I mean, they met, some never knew the bhakti, you know, and I see them all with beads, chanting, enthusiastic, very. Okay, thank you. Hare Krishna. Okay. Anybody else like to say hello? Okay. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
I have to go out on a group thing today. Try. Okay. A bunch of culprits.